proud. Congratulations. Nakomeng, bye.
Vous écoutez CKUT 90,3 à Montréal.
Ok, oh, merci beaucoup.
In Quebec, vaccination against COVID-19 is underway, but not everybody is protected yet. Even if you've been vaccinated, you still need to respect basic health measures, like wearing a mask, maintaining social distancing, and washing your hands regularly. You must also get tested if you have symptoms and follow self-isolation guidelines. Find out about the measures in place at quebec.ca/coronavirus. Follow all the health guidelines, all the time, no exceptions. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
And Mr. Blue invites you to a barbecue on Saint-Jean-Baptiste Day, Thursday, June 24th, from noon to 9 p.m. at Mackenzie King Park in Côte-des-Neiges, corner of Côte St. Catherine and Westbury. Weather permitting, come out and enjoy. On the menu, doubles, roti, jerk pork and chicken, curry goat and chicken. Lots of side dishes. Wear your mask, social distancing required. That's Thursday, June 24th, noon to 9 p.m. at Mackenzie King Park in Côte-des-Neiges. For more information, call 514-771-7011.
What's up, good people? To those of you listening, wherever, whenever, whatever time it is, good morning, good evening, and good night. You are locked into another Tuesday evening with Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Soul P has been on the air since 1994. We bring you all the topics, the guests, the ups and downs, the highs and the lows of the black community here in Montreal, across Canada, and internationally. We have a beautiful evening of music and discussion lined up for you tonight. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial.
Look at me, my bright red Ferrari. My clothes looking it's cold rain, that's winter. Whoa, whoa, when it goes off like a meter. Got a homie going, that's my guzzler. You got me flying, lying, popping, I'm so high.
To live, spaceship,
wish it live. Let the hook get off my money.
Yes, yes, we're back. It's another Tuesday evening, and you are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson. I'm in studios with
Renee Jordan.
And on the air with us today, we have someone who I've been following on TikTok for about a year or so now. She is an author who has compelling and captivating stories that are as captivating as she is. Eldie Curtis discovered her love for people and storytelling the morning she awoke to a camel spider in her tent at an unmarked location overpowered by the summer heat of Afghanistan. Eldie Curtis, thank you so much for carving some time out to be on the air with us. How are you doing?
Oh, thank you. I'm doing good, and I'm so grateful to be here with y'all. So thank you for having me.
Yes. So as we're all in a pandemic and we've all kind of changed the way that we interact with social media and adding different things to our repertoire, I added TikTok to my repertoire of social media, and I found Eldie Curtis and she goes by Hell Girl Vibe. And her TikToks have been funny, intriguing, personality just very vibrant, and then she's also an author, and she promoted her book through TikTok, and I thought she was a good person to bring on the air and kind of share her story with you. So, LD, tell us a little bit about yourself. How are you doing during this pandemic?
Oh wow, like I'm gonna try not to cuss him.
Please don't.
I'm gonna jump my hardest, but I'm doing better. So at the beginning of the pandemic, when it actually hit, me and my husband were living in Germany. You know, I'm prior military, and he was military, still is actually, and that's where we were stationed, in southern Bavaria. When we were coming back, it was right at the introduction of the pandemic, and like everybody was either passing or they knew someone who had passed. It was mayhem and madness, right? So the flight over, there was turbulence. It was a really bad turbulence. And I thought to myself, if this plane goes down, are you happy with the life you lived? And my answer was no.
Wow.
And answering that question for myself, I'm a person who loves to self-reflect.
Uh-huh.
And in my self-reflection, I'm always blood hurt, honest with myself.
Right.
And with my answer being no, I knew I had to change something. I wanted to do things like introduce myself to society, be on social media apps, kind of be a known name in a positive light, kind of break out of the typical black negative stereotype that society loves to beat down our throats, introduce the world to a positive, strong, happy black woman. And that led us here. Yes, ma'am, Ms. Renee.
And what are some of the first steps that you took in making that transformation?
I stopped communicating with all the friends I had.
Okay.
And all the family members I had, because my environment wasn't reflective of who I wanted to be as a person.
Okay, so anybody that didn't fit what you wanted, you push them aside, you stop communicating with them.
Yes, and I know that sounds harsh, but I had a goal in life. And if I'm trying to succeed and I come to you and say, hey, I have this wonderful idea, it's fun, it's vibrant, and the first response is something negative, why you want to do that? We don't do that. That's that white people you know, that you're not supposed to do stuff like that. I had to remove it because my garden was meant to grow. Mm. I couldn't have the weeds keeping me from that. So, and I say this, I talk to everybody still now, but for the past 6 months, or that beginning of those 6 months, I cut off communication.
Okay. Okay. And then where'd you go from there, from cutting off the communication? How did you do the self-work now to build yourself to where you want to be?
So this is going to sound controversial, but I need to be completely transparent.
Okay.
I broke away from my teachings. That included my upbringing, my mannerisms, my religion especially. I found such a distaste for Christianity. Mm. I didn't know who it was. And back in Germany, I learned about Orishas and African deities.
Okay.
And I felt a connection to them, like I had made it home.
Mm.
So step one was to figure out who my true self was. And this is not some type of a feminism, womanist type thing. This is self, right? I didn't know who I was, so I didn't know where I needed to look to find the answers I needed for me.
Okay.
And so I went on that journey. Who are you without your upbringing? Who could you be without the teachings that told you women are supposed to be X, Y, and Z? And it led me in.
Huh. And what did you find, or what are the answers to those questions?
The answer, and it's only one, the answer to that question is I'm infinite. The possibilities that come from me are infinite. And I see that in the Eve gene. I see that in the life starting where our people started. My possibilities in anything that I create isn't dictated in a small box. So it doesn't, so possibilities don't exist for me. I know that sounds weird.
I think I understand that. It's like that, it's like that limitless motivation, track that some people play, where it's like your limits are only what you can see. Your options,
yes,
are limitless. You can achieve anything you want to believe in, right? It's the law of attraction. You can get anything that you want, so long as you put your energy into what it is that you want, as opposed to what it is that you don't want.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I think sometimes it's going back to like an earlier state, because I think as children, we don't really have any limits. You know, we try all sorts of things, we experiment with different things. But then as we get older, we internalize a lot of stuff, we hear a lot of stuff, and we take on a lot of stuff that other people give to us, their direction, their goals, their vision. And we sort of lose, you know, I guess that first thought, or that first thing that came to us as kids, is what we're supposed to be doing or where we're supposed to be going.
Yes, ma'am, indeed. Absolutely.
And I feel like I'm learning, like I follow your TikToks and stuff like that, but I feel like I'm just learning a whole new set. Like you get the sense that you know that a person when you're following them on social media, mm-hmm. but then you realize you don't really know the person. I myself also got into the Orishas, but we're talking 2 decades ago, back in like 1997, when I was studying theater. And what were some of the things that resonated with you on that Afro-African spiritual Igbo Nigerian spiritual beliefs? What were some of the things that resonated with you on that, with that?
It was the fact that these stories, the Orishas, it was too similar to Christianity. Mm. It was too almost as if somebody copied someone else's homework.
Right.
And got the answers wrong. They copied the questions and the answers and still got the answers wrong. It was just, you know how when you look at something that's authentic,
mm-hmm.
and I'm talking about, let's take GMO, for example, plants, fruits.
Genetically modified organisms, yeah.
Yes, you can always spot the GMO produce. The seeds are smaller.
Or non-existent.
Are non-existent, actually, right? And the colors are off. The taste is a little different. We know only by eyesight, but something, for some reason, nature itself naturally avoids these things. And it was sorry, that's the pizza guy. But, yeah, so it was looking at authenticity. It was knowing your mother, and I don't know how to say this without saying it like this, knowing your mother, the way she looks. You can spot her in a crowd if she's far away. Yeah. No matter where you've been, no matter where you traveled, if you get off a plane and there's a bunch of people in a crowd, you're able to spot her immediately.
Yeah.
It was like
that. It's an energy thing, their silhouette,
the way that
they move in the crowd. You can always kind of sense it.
Exactly. And I felt that.
You felt a connection that you couldn't explain with the Orishas.
Exactly, and I've never felt that connection with anything else.
And you mentioned finding this in Germany. Was there something in Germany that kind of caused that connection?
My depression. My depression. I went through a depressive spout, and I just had to find a way out. And instead of getting medicated, instead of listening to what society says that a person dealing with depression needs to do, I listened to myself, and this unnatural voice or energy around me that didn't seem like mine, and it felt very ancestral.
Interesting. So you journeyed back over, you landed in America, and you decided to make that division. What was it like after you started to, let's say, add the family back into the mix and start speaking to everyone once again?
It was very calm, only because of the boundaries I set in place, and the fact that I was communing with my ancestors. I was developing this strong relationship with my Orishas. It was very calm. Any boundary that used to be crossed no longer existed. They couldn't reach it. It was no longer there in existence for them. So
that something that you set up verbally with them, or was that something that you just knew inside yourself that if they crossed that boundary that, you know, you would speak up on it? How did you manage to create those boundaries?
Both. I set up first verbally, and I have like 5, 6, 7 sisters, a couple of brothers. Uh-huh. So it's a big family.
Right.
And I've spoken with several of my sisters, including my mother. Like I've told her that, you know, my connection with Christianity isn't there, and they are very religious, very Christian, very, you know, we were raised Southern Baptist. Mm-hmm. Then we switched over to Pentecostal, and it still never was home. So I let them know that, hey, this is what I believe in. This is where I am in my spiritual journey. I feel this as strongly as I feel anything else, and it just is what it is. Move how you may move with that in regard. So, yeah.
Do what you gotta do, but respect my positioning.
Yes, absolutely. And they don't know. If you don't tell a person your boundary, how will they know when they crossed it? You have to speak up.
Yes, and oftentimes we get angry with people because we have a boundary and they cross it, but we never told them where that boundary was or what that boundary means.
Exactly.
I think sometimes it's easy in theory, and I've heard many people, and that's why I asked you, I hear many people talk about setting up boundaries or having boundaries for people, but I've just wondered, you know, what would a conversation about these are my boundaries, how would that go without sounding offensive to someone or without them, especially with family, when you're having a discussion with family, with your family members about something that they are they hold near and dear, and you tell them something like that?
I'll give you an example, Miss Renee. If someone says something in my family, I'd be like, oh, my ancestors don't vibe with that. They don't mess with that. I don't know what you're talking about. Miss me. So, okay. I would keep it moving. I wouldn't let it linger. So if I tell them, hey, my ancestors don't like that, I keep it moving after that. Whatever they say doesn't matter. I've spoken.
Mm.
And that's it.
And if they want to be around you or with you or interact with you and your family, then they mm-hmm. have to respect that. And that's the end of that.
Exactly. Like, my baby sister, the youngest of us, because I have several, she still believes in, you know, and I don't fault her at all. I absolutely commend her for her dedication. But she believes, you know, in Christianity. She thinks orishas are the devil. She thinks all of whatever, you know, practices that we developed and we have that originated, she thinks they're the devil. She says her piece, and I never stop her from saying how she feels. She says, oh, that's the devil. I say, no, it's not. That's our people. And we keep it moving. She said her piece, I said mine, and we don't let it linger.
Mm.
Very, very interesting. Just in case you're tuning in for the first time, we are speaking to Mrs. L.D. Curtis all the way from Texas. She is an author, was in the military at one point, and has been in this past year during the pandemic, has been on began her spiritual journey, if I may say that, and has come to a point of setting boundaries and also developed a whole new personality when it comes to her social media, and I'm specifically talking about her TikTok. We do have to take a quick break. We are going to be coming back and talking to her a little bit more. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Got it, it ain't a question. Oh, it ain't no one for guessing. No more than emotionally invested. Showing you all my imperfections. Oh, if I let you, don't take me for granted. Yeah. If I'm worth more than you could manage. Manage, yeah. Open with me, oh, we could be honest. Closer to me, oh, giving me silence. Promise that you won't let me fall. Holding me tight, loving me right, giving me life all night. You could be telling me lies, making me cry, wasting my time the whole time. So just be careful what you take for granted. Yeah, 'cause with me, no, you could do damage. You could do damage. You could do damage. Yeah. Worry about it, I'm putting pressure. You'll only cut me if I let you. No, we ain't doing this just for pleasure. Even let me or I'm a lesson. Going on. If you want me, don't take me for granted. Yeah. If I'm worth more than you could manage, baby. Falling for me, oh baby, I caught it. Oh, we could be whatever you want, call it. Promise that you won't let me fall. Oh, oh, oh. Holding me tight, loving me right, giving me life all night. You could be telling me lies, making me cry, wasting my time the whole time. So just be careful what you take for granted. Yeah. No, you could do damage. You could do damage. You could do damage. Oh, you could do damage. No, you could do damage. Yeah. Oh, you could do damage.
grass grow when the sun be burning.
Take your penny hole, don't nobody know where you go. Just know the block just got hot. Because each ring gotta be free, gotta be quick, gotta get for your get.
And ain't no telling what I'm gonna do tonight. I strolled a funeral room full of I met somebody's groom that was.
I took him by the hand, I slipped.
Next thing that I know, he was reaching for his wallet.
On the road,
driving real fast, tank full of gas, cash. It plays my phone fast, to my past my crash list. Go take it slow, take it slow, take it slow. Marco, stack and swerve. Bet that bass makes wood through sirens. Cause
I see him looking, I'm all away.
Should I get out?
No.
I gotta make a quick decision, so my hand moved to that door. But I get a flashback of a recap of the night before. Nah.
This is just like last week when
I strolled up in a room full of liquor. I was stumbling from my car, he must have
noticed I was pressed.
Followed me right in his
liquor.
Next thing that I know, I was leaning, he was driving.
Gotta get out my feelings, see
some
that.
Money,
oh, never wanna go to Venice.
Never wanna go to Venice. But I don't want to go to prison. So I crank that car up. Ooh, it starts up now. I'm hitting 60 out of.
I see him looking a mile away. You like my body. Don't see my face. And with them girls, gonna pay to play.
My bag is aching, my watch is tight. My boot shaking from left to right.
I see you looking.
Get your cash right, get your cash right. Gotta eat right, high heels, gotta feel tight. Hope that street life lives up to the street light. All the bright lights.
Oh my God, my goodness gracious, the music's loud. Sirens blazing, I've gone too far in the deep end. So who's gonna save me? Who's gonna save me now?
We are back. It is still Tuesday evening, and you are still locked into Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson. I'm on the air with
Renee Jordan.
And we are speaking to an author, former military person, and just an amazing comedian, TikToker, storyteller, as far as I'm concerned, L.D. Curtis. Mrs. L.D. Curtis, thank you so much for being here.
Yes, sir.
Before we went to the break, we were talking. LD told us about what happened at the beginning of the pandemic and how she was coming from Germany to the States, and that there was a whole transitional journey that she made into the learning about the Orishas, and then deciding to cut off toxic people in her life for at least a little bit of time to get herself grounded and centered in her spirituality and taking care of her mental health. Thank you so much for bringing up mental health and the fact that you had gone through or were going through a depression at the time. How has, like, acknowledging that and being real with yourself about going through depression, how has that molded the way that you see yourself and you see the rest of the world?
I will say this. It had to do, the growth that I experienced, the coming out of the depression had to heavily do
with the environment I was in. Had I been in my natural environment, surrounded by all the same people who are all hiding their mental anguish, I would have never made it out.
Right.
Cutting them people off and having a heavily supportive partner made sure it was the result of success for me. And one thing I will say that we kind of touched based on during the commercial is that in Black society, we tend to look down on mental issues. Now, I'm going to take it back a little further. In America, like, our mothers will say, oh, you're getting on my nerves. You know, you're making my nerves bad.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't translate that into what it actually was. They were having a spout of anxiety. They were on the verge of anxiety attacks. And they didn't know how to voice it.
Right.
But it's, that's so interesting. You get what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting because a lot of things that we now have a name for today, back then, you know, like serious medical conditions that has to do with things like multiple personality disorder, back in the day, we were just like, oh, Uncle Joe is just crazy. You know, he just
goes exactly. Off.
We didn't have like a medical term for it. Mm-hmm. When someone was sad, we didn't know that it was depression. You know, he's just been sad for the past 2 months. No, yeah. It's depression, you know? And so that's interesting that, you know, you were able to equate getting on my nerves with about to have an anxiety attack.
Exactly. And it took me realizing that, yes, every child, every adult has some form of trauma. There is no one in this world that is untouched by a traumatic experience. Whether they acknowledge it or not is solely up to them, but it's the acknowledgement that as soon as you know that, hey, I got a problem, I'm not right now.
Mm-hmm.
You work toward that and don't be ashamed of it, because honestly, everybody has gone through it.
And throughout this year, you decided to create a TikTok. Tell us a little bit about your TikTok, because I don't want to tell just my experience of the TikTok. Tell us a little bit about your experience. First of all, start off with the name, because I, having you just talking about the fact that your sister believes that the Orishas is the devil, and your TikTok and how you do your TikTok. You know, mm-hmm. I just find that to be kind of tongue-in-cheek and kind
yes.
of... Please, just tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, so growing up, my antics were seen as devilish, evil. My thoughts were seen as unusual because I do believe that women are the center of the universe. And to heavily put on, Black women are the center of the universe. We wouldn't exist without them. So... Mm-hmm. Even though I grew up in a very close-knit community with close-knit ideas and ideologies, somehow I was different. My thoughts were different. And they would always tell me, oh, you're the devil, you're going to hell. And I don't know if we could say hell, but so I had to take part of that. And growing up, I was heavily involved or watched anime, things that normal Black kids I'm putting up the air quotes, normal Black kids weren't into.
Right.
I was into rock music. I was into opera. I was into everything except hip hop and rap. But then I found my love for that later. But it was just different. And of course, that's who I am. Whenever I go, wherever I am, I take my ideologies with me. Even if we're in a room full of closed-minded people, I'm going to always be that version of a hellion. That version of a person that is damned for all damnation.
Right.
I'd rather be that and be happy than be saved and be miserable.
Right. And so what is your TikTok name?
My TikTok name is Hell Girl Vibe.
Yep.
It is a Hell Girl Vibe. Like, don't come on my side of TikTok if you are very conservative. If you don't want your ideas to be questioned, if you don't want the boundaries of your existence to be pushed.
Yeah. And some of my earliest memories of you, at your TikTok page, was you speaking to Irma. and like my favorite there was a period of time when after you did the video with the woman who was stopping that dragon ostrich.
Yeah, well,
you renamed it the Dragon Ostrich. Mm-hmm. That was like one of my favorite series. But tell us a little bit about Irma, because you've had quite a few conversations with with this Irma, and I'm doing the air quotes now.
Okay, so Irma is one of the trees that likes to talk, and the reason Irma came about is because of nature. And I think that a lot of problems stem from us being removed from nature. We don't experience it like our ancestors experienced it. We've been blinded to it. And even as I can remember, I've always had a connection with nature, trees, animals, what have you. And it's back in that house, for some reason, every day I had a different animal in my backyard. I don't know, Kim, if you remember that snake that was in the backyard.
You had snakes, you have spiders, mm-hmm. you have crab spider hybrids crawling up your wall. Yeah, you have lots of different animals that come and visit.
Yeah, just
because like you're being very subtle about it. Just so you know, folks listening out there, Mrs. Curtis would have full-on conversations whereby Irma, the tree in her backyard, would respond and the conversation would go back and forth.
Irma's a hater, just so for y'all who's listening. Irma ain't nothing but a hater, and that's all she'll ever be.
I mean, it works, right? Because you have people who are following you, and like people like myself who remember 1 year ago when you were having those conversations. Is this something that you've always done, and like you're now people are just seeing it now, or what is this really?
Yes, it's always something I've always done, and I think that helped me as a kid. It was my safe space. I would retreat back into my brain and go to these worlds where the limits of current society or modern day society didn't apply to me. And it didn't apply to the things that were around me. Animals talked, trees talked. Trees would uproot themselves and walk. Like, right. You know, so it was my safe spot. And it's literally where I kept myself whenever I was either experiencing trauma or about to experience trauma. I wouldn't come out of it until I felt it was safe.
So it was the spiritual equivalent of having imaginary friends, you could say?
Yes. Except my imaginary friend didn't kill my family, so.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So in that time that you were creating and stuff like that, you're also an author, and you told us before we came on the air that you've published at least 3 novels.
Mm-hmm.
And you're also a spoken word artist, a poet.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about that. How did you come to poetry?
I remember when I was in elementary school, they had this poetry contest. But before that, actually, let me back up. My mother, I remember one of my fondest memories of her was on the porch. And she had a book that my sister had taken from school, checked out from the library. And it was Maya Angelou, a book of poems by her. I had never heard my mama read poetry before, but she often did tell us stories to scare us, like makeup stories and stuff. Bloody Mary, One Arm Frank. She, you know, sometimes it was... Yeah, so I was the gingerbread man. Oh, Lord, that's probably one of my scariest stories that she had ever told us. But I remember always having a love for her when she told stories, because to me, that's when she was the most beautiful person in the world.
Mm-hmm.
just creating. And she's also an Aquarius. We're born 2 days apart. So hearing her read Maya Angelou's poem for the first time, it was my first experience with poetry. And I said, you know what? I can do that too. And I would make poems with the trees outside. I'd make poems with the sand. And it just grew. But then it grew so big that I was like, poems can't hold me. I need more. Right. What else is out there? And she, I acknowledge that she ignited that spark in me of always, you know, creating a story. She used to make me perform as Elvis and Tina Turner.
Right. What a mixture.
Yeah, she would make me perform Since My Baby Left as a 6-year-old and Proud Mary Keep On Turning from Tina Turner. So it just grew from there.
And then so obviously poems were too small. Then you started writing stories.
Yes.
So tell us more about how you got to that.
I had to marry the two because my love for poetry and my love for story writing go hand in hand. One of my favorite publications is called Unladylike. Oh, bless you.
Pardon me?
I said bless you. I saw you cough. Or sneeze, sorry. One of my, actually my most favorite publication is called Unladylike. It's also on Amazon, but it's a short story that gives you a quick introduction to me. It has poetry along with each chapter, but it's an experience just like anything I create. I try to make it an experience. So I made sure to develop and marry those two, find a natural balance where it didn't seem too pushy.
And how do you, when you're writing a story, what are your stories typically about?
Trauma. Okay. Trauma.
But you called it unladylike?
Yes, ma'am.
Why unladylike?
Because, that's what Black women are seen as. Mm. We're seen as unladylike. We're seen as monsters in society. And if you read the story, you'll figure out really quickly that we may be unladylike, but we get things done.
So unladylike as in not the typical, not the stereotypical view of what women are supposed to be.
Exactly.
Okay, and that's supposed to be unladylike according to the so-called status quo. Just in case you're tuning in for the first time, we are speaking to author, writer, poet, former military woman, L.D. Curtis. We have to take a quick break. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
I do not want you to go, but I don't know how to stop you.
Yes, yes, we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. I'm in studios with
Renee Jordan.
And we have L.D. Curtis, an author, a poet, just a really cool, cool person on the line with us all the way from Texas. L.D., thank you for being here.
Thank you guys for having me.
Yes. So we were talking about your first publication that is currently available on Amazon. Remind us of the name again.
Unladylike.
Unladylike. So that's a collection of short stories and poems.
It's a collection of poems and one short story, it's broken down in beats.
Oh, explain that to us. What does that mean?
You know, just the typical journey, the hero's journey. It has to hit several beats in order to be classified as a short story versus a novel versus a epilogue or whatever you want to call it. So, yeah, it's just that. It's a work of, it's a story about a lady, and it's her journey.
Okay. And so what does that look like in your book when you say it's broken down into beats?
Chapters, actually. So every time the beat changes, there's a poem introducing you to the tempo of that of the next beat that's about to occur.
Okay. And you said that you're writing about traumas. Is it a tale of one trauma or several traumas that we're experiencing as we read through the story?
So the main character's name is Ponder, and her name is intentional. So her character makes you want to think, but it's her trauma of life, but it's several traumas all judged into one.
Got it.
And is it sort of just the experience only, or is it the experiencing and then sort of learning and unraveling and coming away from that trauma?
So Ponder decides instead of seeking therapy, she'll seek revenge. So it's a tale of revenge because not every person who experiences trauma decides to have a therapy session in Kumbaya. Some of them and some of us who experience trauma tend to go back and make those people pay.
Right. Mm. That's also true. Yeah. Not necessarily the best way to take care of it, but it is a way to take care of it.
I mean, you tell that to Ponder. She thought it was the best way. So, if you read it, you'll understand. And actually, the response I got from that novel or that short story was so impactful that it led me into creating the next one.
Which is?
A Witch in the Garden.
Oh, that's your second publication?
Actually, that's my third one. But the first one, we're not talking about the first one. The first one is every author, beginner author, has their shame book. It's when they think they want to write, and the book has all these errors, and the story kind of drops here and there, but you push it out anyway. So we're not talking about that one.
Okay. I thought Unladylike was the first one. Okay.
No, Unladylike's my second publication.
Gotcha. I picked up a couple of copies because I plan on doing a giveaway soon, and I whenever I love an artist or someone's work, I always try and get two of it and put it in that giveaway that I'm going to be doing. I picked up A Witch in the Garden. I just started reading it, and you got me hooked because like the first. If I may give away a little piece of it. I don't like to give away
a little bit, not too much. A
little piece of it. You start off the main character starts off literally in a therapist's office. Which is not something that you typically see in a book. So we're starting off with someone who's dealing with mental health issues. And this is a black author, a black character, I'm assuming, because I love that you kind of leave it ambiguous, but you still keep it very blackety-black-black.
She's very black. Right, let me put this to peace right now. For those of y'all who are reading, who will read A Witch in the Garden, my main character is black.
Right. And it just draws me right into the story, and as someone who is a writer myself, I had a piece that I was working on that was kind of in the same vein of this black man who's in this therapist chair, and he's dealing with what he was going through, the trauma and the stuff that he was going through. Why did you choose to start the story like that?
Because I wanted everyone who read this, I wanted the reader to be in the now. And most of the readers, if not all of them, are adults who are currently living in their traumas. They're living in their mental health issues. They're living in that depression, anxiety, what have you. And putting that first, that is the catcher. Like, oh, snap, we don't really see Black mental trauma, Black mental illness. Okay, let me keep reading.
Yeah.
And this is quite the switch from, let's say, the your first publication where Ponder is acting out the trauma. And now you find the person inside an office talking about the trauma. Yeah. Why the switch from one way of dealing with it to another?
It's funny because as soon as I finished writing Unladylike, the main character of A Witch in the Garden presented herself, and her issues were, I'm currently in these traumas.
Mm.
So it literally was up to the character who was speaking at the time.
Okay.
Please tell us a little bit more about that. Yeah, because I love the way you talk, because you're just like, yeah, this person presented themselves to me. It's like, no, wait a minute. You said something pretty significant there. How do your characters present themselves to you?
This is going to sound weird, but I always experience whatever part of their story they want me to experience. For Unladylike, I remember I was in the shower, and there's a scene in Ponder's book that she was in the shower after being assaulted. And I went through that that anguish, that dread, that loneliness that she felt. Like, I was in the shower experiencing her feelings.
Right.
And she wouldn't be quiet. So I had to write her. I remember my husband, I was so depressed, and he was like, what's going on? And I was like, it's not me, it's the character. And he was like, okay, let me get you some tea or something, and you just go write it out. And that's what happened as well with my main character of A Witch in the Garden.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
I think it's very interesting, because before you said that your husband is one of your biggest supporters, and he was one of your supporters in guiding you to be the person that you've become today, and how you're talking about experiencing a character in the shower, and then he's like, let me make you something so you could write it out. What sort of role do you feel like having a supportive partner has played in the development of the characters of your book?
A very significant role. Like, if I was around my old environment, uh-huh, I would have just experienced Ponder's character, and I would have been depressed. I would have had no outlet. It would have eaten me as long as it could have.
Right.
And there was no escape. So having a supportive partner, it kind of guides you to where the end of your journey is. Hey, there's the light. You can make it. I can't help you get there, but I can point you there in the direction and let you know, reaffirm it, that it is there.
That is beautiful to me, because oftentimes when I've been in a relationship and my partner is going through something, there's like, and especially if it's a depressive state, there's a powerlessness that comes from not being able to help a person through that, and somehow he's found a way to support you, even though he can't necessarily physically take that so-called depression away from you. He's found a way to support you in order for you to be able to get past whatever it is that you're dealing with, whether it's you need to write this story, whether it is you need to get through this depressive stage. Based on what you've been telling us, he's found a way in order to be able to support you.
Exactly. And I think it was the realization that he is not my happiness and I'm not his happiness. I know that sounds weird. We choose to make ourselves happy first. We're very selfish people, and that is nothing wrong with that. I live by the selfish ways. I always tell people to put your needs and your mental state before those of others, mm-hmm, especially especially if no harm is coming to anybody and they want a favor from you, tell them no. No is my favorite word. We best friends.
Well, I'm glad you didn't say no to us.
Yeah. Not like I have a soft spot in my heart for anybody who's my follower, who's supportive of me, Kim. Like, I really do. I can't say no to y'all. Which is actually funny because me not saying no to my support system actually was the reason A Witch in the Garden got out in the first place. And I say my support system when I'm naming them, it's really TikTok supporters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you find that like TikTok supporters are different from, say, Instagram or Facebook or any of the other social media platforms out there?